He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Welcome to this week's edition of Car Keys with Jada Markin and myself, Robin Leach. And we are doing this show during a holiday season, and we have weather to talk about. We've got other things to talk about, so let's get going. And so my list, before Jay gets in, includes something that I experienced on the day we did this show as I was driving to my point from which I am speaking now. I left my location early in the morning at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and everything was dark. And I experienced driving conditions which made me think an awful lot about the following things. One is watching out for deer. We all know, many of us know, that dusk, both in the mornings and the evenings, along with the darkness itself, can be a dangerous time to be driving along our roads, no matter where they are, but much more dangerous when you're driving at speeds that can be driven during the daytime safely, which means, in my case, between 60 and 75 miles an hour on the trip that I take in many days, to the slower speeds at night when you can't see very far with headlights and all that. Today's trip was one which included a three-lane road going in each direction, and I decided, thinking about it, and since it was dark, traffic was sparse, but the speeds were not, as I experienced as I was being passed, except for mine, which was more retained to the posted speed limit of 65 miles an hour as opposed to what I usually travel, which is 75 miles an hour. And I thought about where the deer are going to come across the road if they were to jump out in front of me. And I decided on the three-lane road that it was best not to travel in the right-hand, normally called the travel lane, the slowest of the three, supposedly, because I thought that leaving an empty lane in front of me would give me more chance for reacting appropriately should an animal jump out off the side of the road that I, on the same side I was driving, into the driving lanes. So that is something that I have decided is the safest place to be in totally dark weather, and maybe even in dark, in dusk conditions as you are driving in a multi-lane superhighway that allows high speeds but may be in a deer-prone area. That's one thing. Two, when the road deteriorated to a single lane each way, as this travel course was, the next thing that I discovered was that there's been a lot of side of the road patching of with black asphalt, not including all of each driving lane, by the state of New York. And I assume sometimes other states do the same thing. What I noted was that the white lines that usually are very visible along the traveling lane that you're going in is blotted out in many cases by these asphalt patches, leaving a dark part of the asphalt road extended to the side of the road. Also in the dark, and when other oncoming traffic is coming at you with headlights glaring on one side of you, and you have to put your low beams on, and it might be raining or otherwise dark, you can't really see the side of the road as safely as you can when the white lines are in full view. And in these cases on the New York roads that I was traveling, once they did the patching, they didn't do the relining of that side. So I consider that another dangerous situation, which also suggests being focused on the driving you're doing so that you can see where the road is, especially when you're in lots of oncoming traffic, which distracts you from looking at your lane sometimes.
A lot of mental notes that early in the morning.
Excuse me?
A lot of mental notes this early
Correct.
In the morning.
The next thing was, I guess those are the two main things I wanted to talk about on what I call dangerous nighttime driving conditions, and suggest that driving at more appropriate speeds than what you can possibly do in the daytime is an appropriate decision to try to make and stick to when you're driving in these conditions.
Along with that, though, is
the problem that I find is exhibited with all these new lighting systems. And we have talked about the lighting systems in the current era of cars versus what they used to be like back in the day of no halogens, no LEDs, and generally dimmer lighting systems that are no longer the norm on these cars that we're seeing on the road today. I see a lot of what I call fractious light that distracts me, and I have aging eyes, I will admit, but I think a lot of drivers are experiencing the same thing. Jay, with younger eyes, probably says the same thing. But it's very difficult sometimes in the dark, especially, to actually be sure that you are located properly in your lane, partly because of the conditions I just suggested might occur before we got to this point. There's nothing we can do about it, but what's really worse about the driving of oncoming cars is some of these optional light systems that mostly seem to be showing up on SUV types and pickup trucks, which Jay and I have mentioned before, that are light bars that can be mounted on the roof of these vehicles, and they can be mounted along the lower front fascia of the vehicles as well. And they're designed more for, I think, off-roading and maybe hunting and doing things not on main roads, but they are being used in certain cases on the vehicles as they are driving on our roads. When they're mounted on the roof, I find them very difficult to not be blinded by them. You supposedly aim them, but they can be very distracting and blinding, even if you think they're supposed to be low beams on the regular lighting systems. The ones located down at the bumper level are much safer, but they're still distracting because they can be 2 feet wide in between the headlights, and they too light up the road well in front of the vehicle using them, but they can also be distracting on us going the opposite direction. So all these are conditions that I've discovered in my trip to this show this morning, and for what it's worth, I hope somebody's listening and will think about it when they are driving at the same time frame.
Yeah, I agree with the lights. Those light bars, they are not only annoying, and they really should be illegal or at least if they are used, angled properly so that they're not blinding other vehicles.
Next topic is that of rain. Rain on our roads, which goes back to the lining visibility in both, in this case, the middle yellow lines and the white side lines. I drove in a reverse direction that I'm talking about this morning, the night before, so I was going south and it was raining. And raining requires the use of wipers, which we'll get to in a second. The other part of it is that rain makes the roads shine, and with the headlights reflecting off the rainy parts of the road, goes back to the visibility problem that I was mentioning before about bad lining or non-visible lighting. A lot of the lines have been redone with all our road repaving around our northwest corner and, in fact, in New York State. So the lines, in many cases, are in very good condition. But where they are not in good condition, again, the visibility of actually being able to see the road becomes a big problem in a dark night, rainy road, and in some cases, bad wipers condition. Your wipers you really want to have in good condition, because if they don't really clean the windshield in front of you, driver at least, it adds an annoying factor of visibility.
So what should you do?
Jay, you have any comment?
Yeah, I'm asking you, what should you do?
Get new wipers.
How about
and you should also control the speed at which you may be driving. I actually experienced a situation which really was quite frightening in this morning's darkness, in that I actually was wondering at one point whether there was a vehicle coming at me in the lane that I was in. I'm not sure that I was correct in that analysis, but I braked rather sharply, and I did notice a little bit of movement, I thought, to the right of the oncoming vehicle, but I was more concerned about a car behind me, which was actually trying to travel at the posted speed limit speed I was going at, because he did not, or it did not have really a great distance behind me, had I had to really continue what started out to be a panic stopping situation until I was sure that I was not being about to be in a head-on collision as the vehicle ended up in the right lane as it went by me. But
so did you do any driving during this holiday weekend?
Yeah. Holiday weekend.
Well, and so I'm trying to get to the next point here is how did you find traffic conditions? Because I'll tell you a little bit more about my experience in a second, but I'm curious.
Well, the traffic conditions going to an airport, which I also had to do over this weekend, was as bad as it could be, trying to get, as we know, going to New York airports, which is where I was headed with a family member that needed to fly away from the holiday weekend here. The traffic was of course, bad, but it took us, we went via the George Washington Bridge at one point because we were going to Newark Airport, and it took 35 minutes to get from the beginning of, from before the actual entrance to the bridge and then onto the bridge to get across the bridge, to get into New Jersey, to get down to Newark. And the same was, the same condition was present in terms of traffic coming back home from the airport. So traffic was really packed going both ways.
And that was probably a hard call because you were going for, you were traveling from Southern Connecticut, right? And just going
correct
the I-95 access
correct
to across the bridge and back.
Right.
Yeah, that's a tough one to circumvent. But if you're coming from our neck of the woods, there are options to get over the Hudson River.
There are,
not having
and
to go
Waze,
all the way
to- which is a travel means by which we travel navigation wise, took us the way we took to get to the George Washington Bridge and beyond, and we could have gone over the Cuomo Bridge, but they decided that the George Washington Bridge was the way to go.
And yeah, course, and that, you know, in some instances, there's just nothing you can do.
There is nothing you can do. Correct.
But I did quite a few of those airport runs over the weekend, like 4 days in a row, and I do those runs on a regular basis, as you know, and what I found is that even though traffic was quite dense, there were more cars on the road, I would say, than even at peak traffic times during the week.
Right.
And there was congestion in every direction. Usually if you go in and out of the city, traffic flows one way in the morning
one time
and the other
of the
way
day, right
at night.
Yep.
On Thanksgiving Day, for instance, there was traffic going in every which direction. And I found over the years, and I've traveled to Boston over the years, you know, on Thanksgiving Day, traveled to New York. Traffic is going in both directions, and that traffic is really concentrated in, like, between 11 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then again late at night when everybody comes home with lots of turkeys in their bellies. But what I found was that even though there was a lot of traffic, and traffic was overall fairly slow, things moved actually faster than during the week and with all the Yahoo commuters on the road. And my point is, if traffic slows down and people follow the rules of the road, you are actually moving traffic more efficiently and you're actually not losing any time versus everybody racing and trying to get there before the other guy. And it was actually almost relaxing. It was intense because there were a lot of cars on the road and you had to pay attention. But traffic was predictable. People were doing, some were doing stupid things. And you have to allow for the fact that most of these drivers were were driving in unfamiliar conditions, you know, on unfamiliar roads. But overall, I found the traffic moved much better than, let's say, during
I agree with your concept that if it's moving slowly as a unit, it seems to move continuously better than what I call the accordion effect, when people are trying to go at normal posted speeds, which is higher than what you're suggesting they try to go when they're going at a common speed, slower. And that accordion effect is very much of a nuisance, because who knows why you are able to go a mile at 65 miles an hour, say, in three lanes of traffic, and then you're slowed to maybe as much as 5 to 10 miles or 20 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden it breaks a mile later or 5 miles later, whatever it is, and you don't know why you were ever slowed in the first place. But that's what happens. It's people trying to go faster tend to get into this accordion situation.
And that's how you get bottlenecks.
And so, sadly,
I have to come to the conclusion that imposing speed limits, especially when you have heavy traffic, is really effective.
Well, I think the New Jersey Turnpike or some New Jersey roads have lighted signs that they can change for that kind of thing, I believe.
Yeah, but if there's no enforcement...
If there's no enforcement, it doesn't matter. Right.
Exactly.
And there is no enforcement. I have never seen so few enforcement vehicles in the same traffic areas that I have traveled as I have even over the holiday weekend that we're talking about. And this morning, I don't think anybody comes back on duty. I don't know. There didn't need to be. The traffic is very light, as you suggested, in the late night and early morning conditions. But I was surprised at how much southbound traffic was on 684, which is the road I was talking about earlier, as I was going north on 684 with very little north-moving traffic at the time of day that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. And a lot of people passed me because I was thinking about my deer discussion as we had at the beginning of the show, and no deer jumped across, thank goodness, but I didn't want to be the one that was going to be hitting one should it have happened, and I figured I could see it better from the middle lane and have more time to adjust to miss hitting a deer than I would have had I been in the right lane trying to go either the posted speed or higher. But
so
traffic was passing me on both sides.
You bring up something. I find myself, and I don't know if that's the case for you, if I'm driving on a fairly long drive, multi-hour drive, and I start thinking about something seriously, like today's show, in your case, do you find yourself slowing down?
Yes. But not by much.
Okay. But a little bit.
And, of course, I sometimes I'm not slowing down, because during the daytime, and if the traffic permits, the traffic flow permits, the traffic density permits, I use cruise control, and you and I have talked about that. You don't. But I am often on cruise control, which I find I can navigate quite successfully without having to turn it on or off or breaking it off and resetting it again just by picking the right lane.
Cruise control and self-driving cars. I actually rode with somebody this weekend who had been on a taxi ride in California and got picked up by a driverless car. And
really?
This person said it was an interesting experience. It was a little weird, a little awkward. It was her first time. But overall, it was a good experience. It looked like a with a dome on the top of the car. It was probably Waymo or one of those companies. And she said, at first she thought it was a news station vehicle coming to pick her up. But,
what was the speed limit generally that this car was traveling with her in? Was it in a city, so it was slow, or was it...
I think it was a city drive. We didn't talk much about it.
We should get more firsthand knowledge about that.
I know.
Since we probably won't see it in our broadcast area anytime soon. But that's an interesting situation. Did she know in advance that it was going to be driverless, or did
she just... No, she did not.
Nope. Well, that's also... And what happens if you want to refuse getting into it?
I have
no idea. You refuse getting into it, right?
Refuse,
and then
just
call for Uber or somebody.
And she got to where she would have to go.
Yeah, so, okay. Well, I'd like to switch to extended warranties on vehicles. I have just discovered that an extended warranty is useless in certain conditions, which I will sputter about or rant about right now. I have said to other people that I had a lifetime warranty on one of my Jeeps. And let me tell you when lifetime warranties are not lifetime warranties, if you want to keep the vehicle. They are not lifetime warranties when you want to keep a vehicle when the cost of the repair is greater than the everyday reducing value of your vehicle once you drive it off the lot. I had a transmission issue with one of my Jeeps, and I thought maybe I ought to have it checked and fixed under the so-called lifetime warranty that I've had in my glove compartment since I purchased the vehicle new in 2014, only to find out that there is not necessarily small print, but there's print that I hadn't read in 10 years or the 12 years that I've had the car, since I had the warranty sitting in the glove compartment, that said the following: if the repair of the cost is greater than the at the time of the problem value of your vehicle, the maximum that your warranty will pay you is what the vehicle value is. So in this case, I had a transmission issue. I was told the transmission, would, if it needed to be replaced, was going to cost $10,000, and my vehicle had a value of has a value of approximately $3,500, according to, I don't know if it's a NADA used book value or not, and so they would not replace the transmission, even though the vehicle is in otherwise perfect running condition, and I have no intention of getting rid of it. So if you buy, and let's say there are extended warranty programs out there, I am being besieged by mail and on my phone and calls at my house from a couple of the companies saying that the warranty is close to expiring on one of the vehicles I have, and you know, you have Black Friday specials, Black Monday specials, holiday specials off the regular price, which I don't even know what the regular price would be. But if you get an extended warranty in your car, especially the newer cars that have life left in them and hopefully value and cost a lot more than the Jeep did, be very careful that if you're going to keep a car for a long time and the extended warranty has print in it saying that if the cost of the repair that you might need on a warranted item in your car, and not all its pieces of your car are warranted, they won't fix the problem by replacing what is needed, and you will be only offered what the they may say that you will only be offered in lieu of fixing it the value of the car that may be much less than the cost of the repair.
So these warranties, which are in essence an insurance policy, are
right.
Very similar to when you get into a crash with your car. And if the cost of the repair is greater than the value of the car, they'll just write you a check for the value of the car.
If you do not have bridge, what do they call it, bridge insurance.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and it's a problem with driving older cars and classic cars,
right,
determining the value of the car. And I have, you know, I'm kind of on the gamble with one of my old cars.
Yes, you are.
Because if I ever get into a fender bender, they might just write it off. But back to your extended warranty, I unfortunately don't have an update because I kind of slacked off this past week.
Yeah.
I have a similar extended warranty on a Subaru that I own, which is now running in two-wheel drive.
Lifetime, right?
And I went to the dealer with the paperwork that I found in the glove box and with the unlimited miles and unlimited time warranty, powertrain warranty, and I have yet to hear back from them, so I'm going to put that in writing.
Amen to that, because my transmission is obviously a powertrain warrantied item, and of course the powertrains on cars, as we've been talking, these cars will go 200,000 miles But God forbid that if the print in the warranty says that if the repair cost is greater than the value of your car, which my Jeep is now 10 years old or 12 years old, they won't fix it and let you drive it another 10 years.
I have a solution. We should just all get electric cars and get rid of
the transmission. Okay. Okay, Jay, enough on that.
No, it's not enough.
That was a quick solution.
It is, but I don't want one yet, okay? It is so quick. Oh, by the way, I saw my first Lucid Gravity in town over the weekend.
And how is it? Beautiful?
It is, yes. I saw it just go back by, and it took me a while to realize what it was.
I have some comments about the Lucid, to interrupt you. A couple of users love their Lucid, except that both of these people have been experiencing gremlins and or qualitative issues with the interiors of their cars. And I have found that I think that Lucid has got some kind of quality problem, or the early ones for sure, in their system that make it really interesting that if you buy a car. What is the pricing of a Lucid now, Jay? $120,000-something, depending on the model?
Which I think that the most affordable Lucids started around, and I'm saying this from memory, so around $70,000-$75,000.
With no options, if you can find one.
For a two-wheel drive.
Two-wheel drive, right, okay.
Not no options, but, you know, they're well-equipped. They're not...
So back to your plaudits about the Lucid Gravity that you said, because I think they're very interesting cars, and the people like their Lucids. It's just that they, you know, things like door handles.
Well, the Gravity is an SUV that, unlike a Rivian, let's say, that looks kind of, has that boxy look, and looks pretty sharp. I think the Gravity is a more rounded vehicle. I hate to say it, from the angle I saw it, I thought it was a minivan.
Really?
There's nothing wrong with minivans, but I have yet to see one up close, and I definitely want to try one. And I'm sure it's a great vehicle.
I don't doubt it. I think they drive wonderfully, according to these two owners that I had, have been able to have a conversation with. And one of them bought it used, which, of course, made this woman, it was a woman who owned it, very happy with the price she had to pay for it, or didn't have to pay for it, however you want to look at that. And
you're
that
talking
goes
about
back
the sedan now.
The Lucid.
I doubt she bought a used SUV.
Well, it was not new, okay?
Okay. Well, was it a sedan?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's a sedan, four-door sedan.
It's a great car, too.
Correct.
Yeah. The company's bleeding money like there's no, you know.
Well, the problem with some of these newer cars, and we know about the Ocean's debacle, right, is that the quality has been sort of a little bit off and on in terms of the assembly or electronics. This one of the owners has had a lot of electronics issues with the, I don't know, it's a touchscreen or the menu or the operation of the whole thing, and she has yet to sort of really address it seriously because of the inconvenience of where she needs to go, I believe, to have it addressed. It's
so,
not keeping the car from operating, but it is annoying her. And you know, when you buy a car of that substance or cost. Value
where you bring those electric cars, and I don't know if this is a service center or just a showroom, but have you noticed in Queens, near Queens, Brooklyn, near the Whitestone Bridge, there was a huge movie theater that got kind of dismantled in the last year or two, and I just saw that it is turning into a Tesla facility.
And I saw it.
It's pretty big, multi-story.
Yeah. It had big Tesla letters on the side of it.
Correct, that one.
Yep.
And I'm curious to see if it's just going to be a showroom or if it's going to be a service center.
Okay, until next week, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this week's version of Car Keys, and we'll have another one in the future with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach as the host.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhood Radio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.